Yasodhanandana Prachajanaranjana. Yasodhanandana Prachajanaranjana. Amunatsira Panachari. Amunatsira Panachari. Shairata Madhava Kunjabihari. Shairata Madhava Kunjabihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning, the chapter's entitled The Dynasty of Puru, and that is Canto 9, Chapter 20, and the text for today is 18 through 20, and 20 is the text that has a purport, a very small purport, so we'll see. So I'm going to chant text 18 and 19, and do the translation, and then we'll come to text 20. So, text 18. Kanva kumarasya vane chakre samuchita kriyaha budva mrgendram tarasha kridati smasabalaka. And the translation for text 18. In the forest, Kanva Muni performed all the ritualistic ceremonies concerning the newborn child. Later, the boy became so powerful that he would capture a lion and play with it. Text 19. Tam durajaya vikrantam adaya Pramadotama Hare Amsam Shasambutam Bartur Antikam Agamat. It's a translation for text 19. Shakuntala, the best of beautiful women, along with her son, whose strength was insurmountable and who was a partial expansion of the Supreme Godhead, approached her husband, Dushmanta. Then it's text 20, which is on the board, which can chant responsively. Yadana Chakre Raja Bharya Putrav Anindital Shrinvatam Sarva Bhutanam kevag ahasharirini yadana jagre rajam varya putra anu aninditam shrinvatam sarva bhutanam kevag aha saririni yadana jagre rajam varya putra aninditam shrinvatam sarva bhutanam kevag aha sharirini. Please chant. Yadana jagre rajam varya putra vanindito shrinvatam sarva bhutanam kevag aha sariririni yadana jagre rajam varya putra vanindito shrinvatam sarva bhutanam kevag aha saririni yadana chakrihe raja arya putra vanindito shrinvatam sarva bhutanam kevagaharirini. Word for word. Yada, when. Nam, not. Jagre, accepted. Raja, the king Dushmanta. Varya putra, his real son and real wife. Aninda, not abominable, not accused by anyone. Shrinvatam, while hearing. Sarva Bhutanam, all the people. Ke, in the sky. Vak, a sound vibration. Aham, declared. Asharirini, without a body. So translation for text 20. When the king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an unembodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Purport. Maharaj Dushyanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son, but because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everyone heard from the omen that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militamyena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Namahom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Itinamine Namahom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchakalpa, Tarubhyas cha, Kripa Sindhubhyeva cha, Patitanam, Pavanebhyo, Vaishnebhyo, Namo Namaha. So this is a remarkably short purport, and it's in between what's the perhaps the pertinent explanation. So I'm going to use a particular approach and see if I can make some sense of the very short little section that I have assigned today. the main point that came across here was King Dushmanta, he refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, that's what's written, even though King Dushmanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his wife and son. Now, there's an interesting statement that came to mind. It's a statement from Lord Krishna. And he says, every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up his work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So this is from Bhagavad Gita 18:48. I'll read the Sanskrit since this verse came to mind when I was reading this purport. Sahajam karma kunteya, sadosham apina tyajet, sarvaramba hitoshena, Dumen nagnir ivar vrittaha. So indeed, one can say that all ventures certainly have some fault. in this particular instance, this venture that was undertaken by King Dushmanta, because he undertook a venture, was to have Shakuntala become his queen through the Gandharva marriage ceremony performed by himself in a solitary forest. And this undertaking was in accord with religious principles we've discussed in previous classes. he's a Kshatriya king, and Shakuntala, being the daughter of a Kshatriya, it was allowed a marriage whereby there would be a mutual agreement. So the marriage came about due to personal selection of King Dushmanta. And since Srila Prabhupada writes that following religious principles is meant to invoke the mercy and blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's the reason for following religious principles. So the general procedure of Vedic marriage is that a father offers his daughter to a suitable groom or boy, and were the boy to go and ask for the hand of a girl in marriage, that would be considered to be a humbling of his position or his respectable position. So it's usually done the other way. so there's an example of Svayambhuva Manu, who was emperor of the world, and he offered his daughter to Kardama Muni, a poor brahmana. but that particular person, Kardama Muni, was considered to be suitable due to his culture and the qualities he possessed. So it wasn't on the basis of wealth or material considerations that the potential groom was being chosen. So in King Dushmanta's case, the marriage to Shakuntala was rechanting the Vedic Pranava, the Omkara, and this allowed for the immediate marriage. Indeed, there's a statement, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Adi Leela, in the 7th part, 128th verse, which says that the Vedic sound vibration Omkara, the principal word in the Vedic literature, is the basis of all Vedic vibrations. Therefore, one should accept Omkara as the sound vibration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the reservoir of all cosmic manifestation. So it's significant. And this idea that the sound vibration is the basis for any Vedic vibration due to it being the sound vibration of the Supreme Personality of God, it is also reinforced by Lord Krishna himself. And that's from Bhagavad Gita in the 17th chapter, the 23rd verse, because he says, Om tat sat iti nirdesho brahmanas tividha amrita brahmanas tena vedascha yagnascha vihita pura. So from the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. So these three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas. So that's the translation to that particular verse. So since any sacrifice, performing the marriage sacrifice falls into that category, it could be contaminated by the modes of nature, whether it's in something done in passion, goodness, or ignorance. If the sacrifice is aimed at the supreme Om Tat Sat, then the eternal, then that sacrifice becomes a means for spiritual elevation. So that was the case with King Dushmanta. So the beginning of his venture was completely perfectly executed because he was following the regulations of scripture, because he indicated the objective of the sacrifice. And in a similar way, Krishna describes to Uddhava that one practicing, and this is very interesting, and I'm bringing this up because I think it has relevance for the development of thought. It's rather a long description, but bear with me. This is Krishna describing to Uddhava how one can, somebody who's already fixed in Omkara, so this is in the pranayama system, so the person's regulating the life airs, and they're able to actually access that Om Tat Sat, the eternal in the sound vibration within the heart. So this is how Krishna describes how it all actually comes together. So a person fixed in Omkara, being in control of the life airs, so that he's able to move those life airs to the heart, where the sacred syllable Om is situated. So then that person, so actually the Om is described as being this like a sound of a bell within the heart. So the person is bringing the life airs to that spot, keeping the eyes half closed and fixing the attention on the tip of the nose. So the idea of that is that, you know, the senses aren't moving outwards. They've been forced to go inward. So then there's a sense of being enlivened and alert. And this is Krishna describing the process. One should meditate on the lotus flower situated within the heart. That lotus has eight petals. I'm going to read what Krishna says. That lotus has eight petals and is situated on an erect stalk. One should meditate on the sun, moon, and fire, placing them one after another within the whirl of that lotus. Placing my transcendental form within the fire, one should meditate upon it as the auspicious goal of all meditation. And then he goes into a super long description of the form. It's rather extraordinary. That form is perfectly proportioned, gentle, and cheerful. It possesses four beautiful long arms, a charming, beautiful neck, a handsome forehead, a pure smile, and glowing shark-shaped earrings suspended from two identical ears. That spiritual form is the color of a dark rain cloud and is garbed in golden yellowed silk. The chest of that form is the abode of Srivatsa and the goddess of fortune, and that form is also decorated with disc club lotus flower and garland of forest flowers. The two brilliant lotus feet are decorated with ankle bells and bracelets, and that form exhibits the Kustuba gem along with an effulgent crown. The upper hips are beautified by a golden belt, and the arms are decorated with valuable bracelets. All of the limbs of that beautiful form capture the heart, and the face is beautified by merciful glancing. Pulling the senses back from the sense objects, one should be grave and self-controlled, and should use the intelligence to strongly fix the mind upon all the limbs of my transcendental body. Thus one should meditate upon that most delicate transcendental form of mind. So this is the practice for truly making and having the proper understanding of if somebody is focused on the Omkara. They actually need to meditate on the lotus within the heart and the delicate transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within that lotus, within the heart. Now, the fault in the endeavor did not lie in, or you could say apparent fault, did not lie in the personal selection of Shakuntala by Maharaj Dushyanta, nor in his execution of the marriage sacrifice, which included the completion of the sacrifice, which was actually placing the relevant substance that allowed for procreation in Queen Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. So the fault in the undertaking lay in his having to refuse to accept his wife and son. And when his wife approached him, so some time had passed, we heard that the boy actually had developed quite a bit of strength in the fact that he had the ability to play with the lion. Now, I found this really extremely interesting because in the city where I'm from, just maybe 30 minutes out of the city, there's quite a lot of lions. It's quite wild. And if one gets an opportunity to go to the particular area where the lions reside, sometimes the cubs are removed from the lioness and they sort of looked after a little bit extra, and so you may have a warden taking care of one or two lion cubs. And then if one actually approaches a lion cub, it's not a small matter. Even a baby lion, the paws are literally like a foot wide in circumference. So the body is small, but the paws are, you know, like a foot wide and extremely powerful looking. You can see the claws. And I one time on visiting, you know, the invitation is extended if you want to pet the cub. Anyway, I refuse. Because it's clear that, I mean, it's known amongst locals that, you know, you don't approach a lion. It's definitely not done. But anyway, inevitably, some of these wardens do actually get attacked at some point. So it's rather dangerous, even a cub, never mind a full-grown lion. If you do see a full-grown lion, and this is from the vantage point of sitting in a car, I remember once making a sort of attempting to make a connection with a huge lion, and you actually see that the creature's wild. It's not actually possible to fully connect. You can see that the creature's considering how it's actually going to get its food stuff, And even in a car, one feels, oh, one can't leave any space, in the window has to be up. So a lion is not a light matter. So this young boy had developed such strength that he could actually approach a lion and control it, which is very extraordinary. I mean, truly it's extraordinary, just having been exposed to lions. So in this particular venture of King Dushmanta, he was going back to the point of the fault in the endeavor. He was indeed performing his work, and it was born of his nature. So particularly, he was showing leadership and power and heroism and determination and generosity. And so how this is the case, because these are the, this is the nature of a Kshatriya king. In Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur's examining this particular verse that lists, which is 1843, that lists the qualities of a Kshatriya, he says that he uses the term the ability to control others. So, you know, the Ishvara Bhav. So he, King Dushmanta, was actually using this ability to control others in some sense when he wasn't accepting his wife and son, because he had the understanding of what would be the outcome amongst those that he was ruling, and that would be that there would be gossip and from the citizens. Thus, he was controlling his citizens by not giving them a reason to be critical. His determination earlier on, it had been seen in his making clear his intention with Shakuntala. I'll just read it. "O woman with beautiful eyebrows, you have taken your birth in the family of Vishvamrita, and your words are suitable to your family. Aside from this, the daughter of a king selects husbands of equal status." So very determined, quite clear. And now he's showing this equal determination not to accept his wife and son. So it appears that there's fault in the endeavor, but he's acting with the leadership capacity for the protection of his citizens. because he acted in that way, it's allowed, usually a voice from the sky means the demigods are saying something, they're intervening. So they're coming to the defense of Shakuntala just by virtue of the position, his leadership position, the position he took. And so the voice says, and we'll come to it in a little while, exactly what is said, but what's at least stated in this verse that I have today is that the voice notifies the citizens that the boy and the woman are truly the king's wife and son. And here another quality comes to the fore. He showed an expertise in accomplishing the task he had to accomplish, because it's a delicate situation. His task was, he needed to be able to accept his wife and son, although they were unknown to the citizens. And he managed to accomplish that just by the stance he took. So this is great leadership capacity. And this tactical move that King Dushmanta used, one has to say tactical move because it's a Kshatriya, so very aware of the particular actions to be performed to achieve some sort of victory. it shows another quality in that he can't be surpassed by others, because this is no mean feat. And since his occupation was performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, then any defect in that occupation gets purified. And this came to be the case for King Dushyanta. And because the whole undertaking was done with the correct objective. So we know that whatever transpires after that has to actually be equally for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. And this supposed defect or this fault that he had to actually take this position actually became purified just by virtue of the fact that he'd had the right objective to start off with. So naturally his task was made easier by the fact that his wife hadn't violated the marriage, for she had practiced sexual abstinence, which is the chastity, and so she had that virtuous quality of being chaste. So Srila Prabhupada writes that when the results of work are purified, when they're connected with devotional service, and then there's a particular result that happens, and that result is that one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and so that's what self-realization is. So since King Dushyanta was obviously familiar with Omkara, I'm making that connection with the earlier description that he was perfecting that path of self-realization. And in particular, it's to see that Vishnumurti within the heart. And this is possible, Srila Prabhupada writes, when one observes complete abstinence from sex life. So that's actually the criterion that has to be met. So this entire pastime or this particular section that we're reading has that prominent feature, both on the part of Shakuntala and no doubt on the part of King Dushyanta, because it's the pivotal requirement for being able to see the form of the transcendental, the delicate transcendental form of the Lord within the heart, this abstinence from sex life. And actually the recommendation for practicing this is to live in a secluded place. And we know from what we've read of Shakuntala that that is precisely what she was doing. She was living in seclusion. So the whole pastime comes together in a very beautiful way, I think, because it highlights that both persons were the underpinning of the abstinence was permitting that realization of the self and realization of the Vishnumurti form of the Lord in the heart. So these were some thoughts that came on this very short purport. So if there's anything to add to the discussion.
Maybe you can explain a little more that last point, that externally appears that a lot of the impetus of King Dushyanta was the attraction that he had for Shakuntala's beauty, and then he was not willing even to wait for the sage, as she initially said, "Well, you know, just wait for my father. He will say yes. He will agree with the marriage proposal." But it appears that he was, "Why wait?" type of thing. So it appears as the desire to unite with Shakuntala was very strong, but he, because he understood religious, how to do it in a religious way without violating religious principles, then it was all right and it was approved by the sage Kanva. So it seems clear to me that Shakuntala was, she remains very abstinence, how you say, she was very chaste and in a secluded place, you know, in the ashram of Kanva Muni. The king was, it's not very clear how, although perfectly situated in religious principles, still the act of engaging in sex within religious principles is seen to be, you know, highlighted in his profile like that. I don't know if...
Okay, I guess what you're interested in examining is to which extent was his desire to fulfill his particular desires because of being greatly attracted to the beauty of Shakuntala, how that actually sort of indicates that he may have been following this particular point of abstinence, because I was pointing to that. Well, how I understood it when I read this particular section is that King Dushmanta is actually a super elevated personality. So the first thing that struck me was, you know, the clarity with which he understood the situation right away. So there was the great attraction to the effulgent Shakuntala sitting in the solitary forest in the ashram. But at the same time, he obviously made his decision immediately. So, and he gave encouragement to her for her to also make that choice, because she was also coming from a Kshatriya birth. So the right existed on both their parts to mutually reach an agreement. So since the quality of a Kshatriya is extreme determination, and I try to highlight that it was very strong, that once he'd made his decision, the determination was there to go through with it, and there was no hesitation. So, I mean, it's the nature of a Kshatriya, that no hesitation. That there were lusty desires was mentioned in one of the verses, but it's an elevated personality who's acting according to religious principles. So he proceeded with the correct procedure of sacrifice that needed to be performed. And he was clear in his objective, who, for whom that sacrifice was to be performed, by virtue of the fact that he chanted the Omkara. So there was no fault whatsoever. And even the wording of how the sacrifice was completed, which was the verse Giri Dari read yesterday, I mean, the wording of it indicates precision and awareness of sacrifice. The particular verse, I mean, I feel a bit shy reading it, but it's the completion of the sacrifice. King Dushmanta, who discharged semen in the... that was the next verse. Hold on. Oh, yes. He placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. So it's very much a focus on completion of a sacrifice. So there's it's in accord with that definition that was given for the Gandharva marriage, that the purpose is to beget a child. So the ceremony is performed and the proper thing is done to complete the sacrifice to allow for the child to be placed within the womb of Shakuntala. So I truly understand it that you know, there's recognition of the lustful desire, but the actions are performed on the correct plane of religiosity. So it's very precise and perfectly executed, and with full determination and clarity, and having the objective in mind that this is for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's very perfect. So that's, I truly understood it that way. It's a very perfectly executed sacrifice. And indeed, we see the that the result is this most beautiful boy, the son, who is in a situation where he's receiving all the necessary purificatory processes by Kanva Muni. So everything's perfect and perfectly in line with religious principles. And he's obviously developing as a young prince in the correct way in terms of getting an opportunity to develop his strength, because the forest, those wild forest animals are right there. And that's usually how what is done in terms of princes in the Kshatriya line. There's that concession for hunting. He's not hunting, he's actually manually wrestling with those animals. So, yeah, everything's very perfect. And to me, it just points out King Dushmanta's long-term vision, which is only possible because he's doing it for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Just saying one thing, just appreciating one sense. I find myself trying to understand King Dushmanta's process, and realizing as I hear in you that is quite, that's quite a mistake. We always told, I mean, we have the tendency to try to understand things from the reality of our experience, and that's not, that's a great mistake, because these are Bhagavatam personalities. They're not ordinary, so their process is very far from a Kali Yuga fellow. Mm-hmm. So no doubt that better not to try to get too much in understanding or try to understand their processes, just take it as it is. The result is, as you said, is it was a perfect result. The child that was birthed of that union, that thing is mentioned there, his expansion of the personality of Godhead, which is, you know, okay, there you go. So, yeah.
Yeah, all the proof is there that it was a perfect sacrifice, that marriage ceremony, and that the undertaking was perfect, although there appeared to be that little fault when it came to the moment of acceptance of the child and the wife at a later point in time.
So I'm guessing it's because Shakuntala it's mentioned that she's like basically like a demigod, or she's like a descendant of a demigod. So the king must have, like, this kind of common question that he must have thought that, like, he must have known, like, if he unites with her, then a great son will be born. Is that kind of his, do you think that's his thought process?
Well, if the sacrifice is done correctly, then a great personality must be attracted to come to that particular womb. So he executed the sacrifice perfectly. And a lot of emphasis is placed on that second part, that it's not something he, you know, just the physical discharge was never something he had ever done before. So it was very precise and perfect, and that emphasis on having the objective clear, that it's for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in fact, this particular quality that the child showed, this fearlessness, I have read Srila Prabhupada writing that having such complete fearlessness is only possible if one is Krishna conscious. So actually a super great personality was born. I mean, says, as was mentioned, it's an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's also Krishna conscious, hence the extreme fearlessness. It's not possible otherwise. So the mind is very fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that means that there's detachment and there's knowledge. So that is what King Dushmanta displayed. He was very detached. So this is the part that perhaps ties also into the first question that was asked. There was detachment and knowledge. So he's able to actually execute everything very perfectly. So there's not attachment to what's going to be the result of that sacrifice, because the result is already offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the blessing that came because of executing the sacrifice so perfectly was to receive that extraordinary son, the prince. So there wasn't attachment to the result. There's detachment, but there's a desire to execute perfectly for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So a very controlled personality, extremely controlled, extremely knowledgeable, extremely detached. That's what I'm understanding from reading this. So he may not have known that it would be a son or the particular quality of a son, but by virtue of his knowledge and proper execution of the sacrifice, it was made possible. So that he would know that it would invoke the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, it's hard to imagine such an extremely elevated personality, so clear, so pure, really.
Yeah, that you said that, you know, King Dushyant, he was so elevated, means very religious. But of course, it is a discussion. Of course, I don't take it other way. That how could he forget the common thing that he should have asked the blessing of Kanwa Muni? Because Sankutala was adopted by Kanwa Muni. Okay? At least he's a adopted father, whatever you say. So without his permission, you know, he took the hand of Sankutala. They got married immediately after all this using pranava mantra and everything. And we saw later on that how Kanwa Muni did sanskar for Sankutala's son, that he could have done for marriage ceremony also. So is it not like because of sex impulse, what you can say, and king also forgot his duties? Is it not?
Yeah, so the the concern is that, you know, why on earth was the blessing of Kanva Muni not invoked? And since Kanva Muni was doing the samskaras for the sun at a later point, we hear, why would he also not have been officiating that marriage ceremony? I mean, there's still this problem with, yes, King Dushmanta may have been so elevated, but truly, you know, why couldn't he wait for Kanva Muni? Well, I think it's that it's the particular nature that dictated the course it took. So, you know, since the normal Vedic marriage is anyway for the sage to be giving his daughter in charity, so if it had been Kanva Muni's intention to have his daughter be married in that way, then he would have to be offering his daughter to King Dushmanta. He wasn't present at that moment, and taking into account the nature of a king and his determination, he made up his mind right away. So he immediately thought of the method to achieve his end. And because he's a religious king, the method used was, you know, the proper sacrifice. And the proper sacrifices included the begetting of a child on the same day. Well, of course, at night, it's specifically mentioned, so he did everything in the right time. So it's the nature of a religious king and a very powerful personality and a very powerful kshatriya. So there's no fault. It's a permissible method, the Gandharva marriage sacrifice, and he executed it with no fault. And it had an extraordinary outcome too, and everything played itself out in a very extraordinary way, and the only difficulty was looking at the fault that later on, because it had been performed in that particular way, that it created that problem with the citizens, that it was unknown to the citizens, this wife and son, that he actually had a queen and a child. So, and that's when he had to actually find a way to manage it and deal with the problem. It came much later. So sometimes it's like that, you know, the immediate solution is there, but then later on, because of the way one dealt with the whole issue, the problem comes later. So in this particular case, the problem came later, but again, because it was done with the correct objective, with the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's a religious king, he considered the way to protect both the citizens and to protect the wife and child, because that's the nature of a kshatriya, protector. So his means of protection was to reject the wife and son, and therefore the citizens are protected, and it caused obviously some pain to his wife and son, but because of the elevated nature of both personalities, and particularly that principle of sexual abstinence had been followed, it allowed for it to be declared, no doubt, by a demigod very pleased with both personalities, that no, indeed, this is the wife and son of the king. So that put the citizens at rest, and it allowed for the king to, and it says, gladly accept his wife and son. But he had to deal with that issue when it came. So again, you know, his great leadership capacity and his great determination and heroism too, that even in that very uncomfortable situation, he found a means to manage things. So it's rather extraordinary, actually, the whole pastime. Thank you.
Again, if you take the case of Lord Shiva and Mohini Murthy, Lord Shiva and Mohini Murthy, what happened? Lord Shiva was thinking that I have controlled my senses, I have everything, you know. But that episode proves that even he got defeated in front of Lord Krishna, you know. He became Mohini Murthy, and then he realized, the Lord Shiva realized, sex is so very, very, very strong thing to avoid, you know. And that's what I was thinking, that in this case also, Dushyant, although he was a very religious person, and he forgot his duty because of, you know, lack of devotional service to Krishna, our Lord. Because only Prabhupada says only that only you can control your sex impulse, everything, by the devotional service. Unless you have that, you cannot. Even in Lord Shiva failed, God failed. So that is what I want to say, but I don't know.
But King Dushyanta didn't fall at all, and neither was Shakuntala falling in this particular case. King Dushyanta acknowledged his lustful desire, and he then executed a sacrifice that elevated, and so that sacrifice, that performance of that marriage ceremony right on the spot, and the particular method he used, allowed for that, you could say, fulfillment of that lustful desire, but it's performed as a sacrifice. It's very precise, exact, perfectly executed with the correct consciousness. So there's completely no fault with King Dushyanta. And Shakuntala too, she behaved perfectly properly too, because it was pointed out to her that she could actually choose. And she chose. I mean, it said that she was silent, so that was her giving her agreement that she could choose the particular husband. So she was silent when he pointed out to her, you know, the daughter of a kshatriya can choose her husband. And in the purport of that particular verse, there's mention, you know, the various occasions when other personalities have chosen their wives or husbands. So she made the choice. So there was mutual agreement, and it was permissible, and it was done in the form of a sacrifice. So it's outside the realm of pure lust. And in terms of the example of Mohini Murti and Lord Shiva, well, in that particular case, Mohini Murti exhibited all kinds of seductive behavior that made it very difficult for Lord Shiva. Yeah, and he pursued. Yeah, so that's a different situation. It's a different situation. Yeah. So, well, thank you very much for the discussion. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.